It's a podcast. And now,
welcome back to more garbage.
Yo, yo, yo.
Peace, 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 peace.
Welcome back, more garbage podcast. It is Friday Night Compost, and we're here to take out the trash, son. Taking out the trash with my co-hosts, Fubzilla and K-Bugs. I check Fubz's OnlyFans, $6.99 a week. I thought it was $69.69 a week. Today
I got the decimal in the wrong place.
We're going to be discussing only paper. Only paper. We're only discussing paper here tonight. All right. Only look at that, Kurt. You see how you're jumping out of the camera one. Right there? Boom.
Only you paper. Like how you got that was good. I didn't you notice
like,
that.
You like how you had the little mini hand with the phone?
Yeah.
Special guest. Yeah, your mini hand is funny. It's like
so that's the original person's hand in there. Yeah, Kurt was getting live in that session right there.
He was hilarious. Like, very serious.
He was very vivid. So
I was filming tonight, you for your OnlyFans.
We are discussing OnlyFans. And disclaimer, I don't think any of us have an OnlyFans account.
We're definitely not
OnlyFans creators. But I've never actually even used the site, so
same. So we're just talking shit. We're just talking shit about concepts.
Intellectual exercise, okay.
Well, this is more about like companies, right? Like, because
basically the long and the short is they decided to ban porn content, and then they reversed their decision.
But you know why?
And it was built on the back of sex worker channels, and it blew up ridiculously during the pandemic. And let's share.
So here's the real
some
thing.
Some research.
They definitely when OnlyFans launched, they promoted to sex workers in the porn industry and girls and models and dudes and everybody, and that's how they built it. But this was a flex on MasterCard and Visa that didn't want us to keep processing. They wanted to stop the processing of credit cards. And it was like something along those lines. And they went back on it because more or less like the outlash shows how many people they were going to lose. You know, oh my God, we're going to lose everybody, which means, you know, there was another company going to fill the slot. No pun intended. Where they were going to leave. And so what did they do? They did what anybody would do. They got all this hype, free press now. They didn't pay for that press. Let's think about that for a second, right? One announcement, and they were the talk of everything, including to today, right? So that's the other thing. There's a possibility that they did this thing to gain attention, and then now their situation normal, back to normal. More people know about it than ever. That's just one thing.
Serge, in any of your research, did you come across like what the major shareholders or like owners are?
Well,
of this company?
So OnlyFans openly said that the pressure was coming from three bank investors, which was like Mellon Bank, Chase Bank, and another bank. Mm-hmm. So the bank pressure, right, was forcing them to clean up their act. And, you know, as we were getting to, here we go. Bank of New York Mellon, Metro Bank, and JP Morgan Chase were the banking partners that caused the initial decision. And yeah, here we go. In this article, there's a lot of tweets that were shared. First, they were, you know, trying to bring everyone back that they had disenfranchised. And by banning pornography, which the site blew up on, it basically quintupled.
Yep. But they knew what they were doing. Like, that wasn't like, oh, by accident.
As far as creators. But
that's by
it
design.
I believe it has something like 80 million subscribers, OnlyFans, has 80 million people using subscriptions. Now, those numbers alone mean that like one out of four Americans have an OnlyFans account, if it was just in America, which it's not. It's actually, so the company was started in the UK, right, by the Stokelys, and then 75% of it was bought by a Ukrainian gentleman from Florida that was into
so many levels of wild
porn sites. He's actually that guy, I forget his exact name, Leonid something, Leonia something, Redsumsky. He's actually made more money from porn than any other single person, including Hugh Hefner and Larry Flint.
Oh, so he's big
time. He's like big time porn dude. And it said, this one thing I was reading was saying that he at some point was selling like website domains, and he had all these websites that were called like passwords.com, and that people were actually trying to buy passwords for sites that you had to pay for content, and they were selling, you know, passwords. But in
the guy that was hacking that
court documents, it was said that their business model was actually to do that, but receive payment from the actual sites whose passwords they were selling. Those were the clients. So really interesting. It's a
genius cycle.
Yeah. So you know, the guy was maniacal to begin with, right? Yeah. But OnlyFans CEO Tim Stokely said banks that work with the platform did not want to be associated with sex work, right? JP Morgan, particularly aggressive in closing accounts of sex workers or business that supports sex workers. Right?
That was big for a long time.
And the backlash, the outrage was huge. Okay.
As we always say, it's always about the business. It's always about the paper. So like all the people, they're like, well, we can't deny that kind of money. So we'll bend.
Well, once any platform gets large enough where it does enter that mainstream sphere, it becomes YouTube or Uber. Like
they were trying to flex. Like, cleansed, we don't want to have. You know, the banks are like, we don't have anything to do with this. But then banks are like, wait, what did we just walk away from? We're all right.
Understood.
So according to Newsweek, they released a statement on Twitter on Wednesday announcing they were pulling plans to ban pornography, which began, thank you to everyone for making your voices heard. Okay? Hmm. That was them rescinding the ban, right?
Right.
But, of course, here we go. We have secured assurances necessary to support our diverse creator community and have suspended the planned October 1st policy change.
Suspended.
We have secured assurances necessary.
Right.
Yo, there is a lot of money.
The language.
A lot of people were like, yo, don't change it up. We got you. We don't worry
about that. Well, a lot of people, like this person here, said, no chance. You've proved you're not trustworthy.
Yep.
Other people are like, too late. My fans already moved. Okay.
Yep. Whatever.
People were like, you basically rug pulled us now. Why would we?
We're not going to ride your magic carpet ride from here.
Yeah. Why would we think this is not happening again down the road? Like,
they're not
going to
lose that many people, though. That's the thing. Like,
and herein lies the main issue we're dealing with in society.
Okay. So then,
how many times can you be like fooled or told something and then realize so many down the road that you've had the rug pulled on you before? You're just like, fuck this whole foundation we're floating on.
Look at this.
Anyway,
stigma drives sex workers underground, where workers are more likely to be brutalized. Sex workers work. It's time to decriminalize. You see this? This was August 19th. August 19th.
They may just do that.
OnlyFans created a safe space
sex work.
For sex workers and chose to put them in danger again.
They may do that.
Twitter will ban sharing thoughts starting in October. As OnlyFans decides to kick the core base it built itself around to the curb, I'd like to remind them that Tumblr was purchased by Yahoo for $1.1 billion in 2013, and following its ban of adult content, was sold in 2019, 6 years later, by Verizon for $3 million. It was bought for $1.1 billion and sold for $3 million. What? Lost. That is crazy.
Enormous tax write-off.
Tumblr was sold for $3 million? Tumblr was huge. Tumblr hard.
Yeah, basically that was like a gay thing. That was a gay.
Just a lot of sharing.
Grindr. You're thinking about
Grindr. Grindr was
no Tumblr Listen. Was like for blogs and resharing. But they like got cool big because of their porn art.
Listen, Tumblr
it's the most like basic thing humans do is fuck, right? And so like at the end of the day, like what has happened online is like. Weird communities, right? At this point, like that existed in the world, not just online. Same.
Come on, man. If you're pumping a generation for nonstop with porn, what do you think they're going to develop? Fucking wonderful. Like, you know, we're going to have all sorts of fetishes.
Look at this.
Exactly. You got it. And earlier because like
we're breeding that shit.
The site's founder,
like, Gaffel magazines from like. Places.
Yeah, you're like find 10-year-old like Playboys like, from your dad. Dick.
You're like, what the fuck is this?
So you're
gonna
hanging
out
in
1980s looking at 1969 Playboys.
Yeah, like you're like, what'd you take? I got Penthouse Forum. Wait, there's no pictures? Fuck. Because it was small and I could steal it real quick, put it in my Vibe. Oh, but there's no pictures. Oh, never forget that shit. Oh, fuck. These kids don't know.
They didn't have much choice but to change the rules initially. Those credit card companies simply are too powerful. And although their growing hesitancy to process payments for pornography. So basically, this is where the power comes from. Is in order for OnlyFans to get their money, these payments have to be processed. And if the credit card companies aren't feeling that company, they just may not use them as a vendor or work with them.
Correct. And they are clearly not the first ones to be facing this dilemma.
Nope. Consumers of porn are among the most likely to dispute transactions. They don't want to deal with the headache. That's another thing, right? So, I mean, it's pretty obvious why they would want to push back. But at the same time, they already work with so many companies, right? I mean, why this one to be singled out? I guess because it went so mainstream.
Correct.
That's it. It got big. Everybody became school teachers and shit.
It became the elephant in the room that you couldn't ignore.
So well, listen, it's also like a statement of
our populace that they don't want to deal with.
This story, referred to its reversal, right? And they claim that it suggests it reached a better banking arrangement. The platform, primarily known for hosting adult creators, had openly and explicitly blamed banks for the original ban. How do you feel about that? Where they're like, we can't do anything. It's the bank.
No, seriously. Well, if you're a board of owners of a company and you are doing everything you can to stay in business, but you're dealing with certain government regulations.
That's right.
What do? You appeal to public opinion. You go out there and you say, this law is wrong.
They're referring to it as banking censorship. And of course that appeals to right here, those concerned about the power of banks to effectively shut down businesses they don't like by cutting off payment service.
I bet. Right? Dollars to donuts. So, they said we got to do this and let the people speak and watch them renege, and that's what happened.
I get it.
Right, you get it as a businessman, Kurt. Right, like it was a card played because they were in a situation. I get that. Where you're like, oh, my hands are tied. It doesn't matter what people think. Hands are tied right now. We have to make
banks
a move.
Are the best at playing that game.
Oh, that's their job, dude.
Yeah.
So it happened, and governments, right? Those two things are very good with. You know, yeah, I've seen
you
it
see this
all
line?
Kinds of businesses.
The push has been led by the Christian group Exodus Cry and the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, Jesus. formerly known as Morality in Media.
Oh my goodness. God.
Formerly known. Yeah,
you can trace that up to some there's think tank, some sort of central. I don't know. I don't want to say certain names, but yeah, I'm
Sam,
sure.
Sam, go ahead.
Come on,
shout it out.
We know already. It's ridiculous, guys. I mean, that's the cognitive dissonance that we're all dealing with. And like, they're going to keep throwing shit at us. They're going to suppress us from ways to enjoy ourselves. We know it. This is this thing. And here we go. OnlyFans, one of many. But you know, I'm happy about this, and I'm hoping that people jump ship and they diversify and they go into smaller, more independent websites, and they go to other streams. You know, OnlyFans is only around the corner from so many other organizations where cryptocurrencies will hopefully unlock the shackles that these credit card banking institutions have had on people to be able to commit or to be able to openly, you know, have commerce amongst each other. And this is one primary example of how they're kind of just shoving the stick in the spokes of our system. But hey, I mean, they're not the first ones. WikiLeaks dealt with this back in the day. They were banned from taking any sort of credit card. They had to go to crypto. They were some of the first people to start taking Bitcoin, and it actually paid off for them very well because they ran into that bull cycle in 17, and hopefully they made good money off of it. Maybe they held a bunch now. I don't know. I mean, I don't know where WikiLeaks is. It's still probably a front organization, but nonetheless. So, well, I mean, you know, there's other entities that have dealt with them.
Decentralized.
Look at this subheading right here. A now overturned decision to ban porn shows how banks in the state interfere with legal activities and why cryptocurrency is needed.
Okay.
Well, it's true.
So did you just bait me into saying everything I just said, Serge? Because I feel like an asshole now.
It's real. Like it's, but you're saying it because it's real and it's what's gonna happen. It's
well,
like,
I'm saying because I felt it, and all of a sudden, Serge is producing articles that actually, like, I'm not the only one saying it. I just
you're not. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're deep in it, so you see the potential of it. And I think that's what most of the world in general, when you're on the edge of the curve, that's the curve, can't see yet. And that curve is that it's the future.
It is. It's both a, you know, that it still has the white glove and the dark. The darkness to it,
but
too.
So I did think. Money originally.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's going to be all sorts of lovely conveniences. But
what do you think they went through?
They're
like
control
when they decided to stop backing money by gold. What were they thinking?
Well, they did that on purpose, man. I mean, of you course. Know, it took them having to sink the Titanic for that to happen.
I totally understand. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that's the same kind of like future decision. Is my point that they knew they had to do something. You know, and so this is the same thing. Like, people are like, oh, there's going to be something done. And I have a friend that does a lot of high-end stuff with crypto. And, like, what it really has done, more impressively than anything, to be honest, is helped countries in real need to stabilize their currency. And I think that's the best thing it's done. You know, like, we have a lot of first world problems. And it's for certain places, it's, like, really, like, made currency happen. Like, people have currency again. That's not run by like the whim, so to speak.
Well, I don't think we're there yet. I think there's still a lot of battle and manipulations going on right now. And I think unfortunately, governments, international banks, and other main, big time organizations or foundations have a leg up. They have the control of what's going on. And I think, unfortunately, as much as the hope and the dream that we think a lot of cryptocurrencies are going to bring us in terms of freedoms, I think there's going to be a lot of lost
control.
Freedoms at the same time that we
well,
don't
I think
even
that it's
want
already
to think
part
right
of our
now.
Financial makeup. And so, therefore, the powers that be just want to hold on to and control it.
Yeah. And you know what? The cool thing is we'll be able to throw our money around quicker so long as there's power, first off, right? So long as we're in an area where there's actually a way to do that, because we're now all in the electronic world. But besides that, I don't know. I feel like that'll happen. It'll be cheaper for us to throw money around between each other, but I think they'll also be a lot tighter of a control. And then there'll be certain things that in areas where, you know, I don't know, they can start to restrict how that money is spent and where it goes. And that's
within our country.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one example is, let's just say it's very simple and easy. All right. So right now we're kind of going through this whole massive scenario where everybody's on unemployment, but it's a very, you know, we were talking about this maybe 3 years ago, or whatever the last election was, and it seemed like a really far-fetched idea. But we're really close to universal basic incomes for a lot of people, or at least a lot of the population in this country. So with that said, it's only a slight shift of the dial before you have everybody that's just getting their unemployment checks in the form of a digital dollar. I think so we're within 3 years of that, 5 years of that for sure.
Of a universal income?
No. In terms of how that money is
not even a question
dispersed in digital dollars. So, but then now the other thing is, now that you're getting a digital dollar from the government, now the government CBDC. Has a lot. Yeah, the government has a lot more control over. Now they're going to say, okay, now you have to spend so much on
they milk do that already
and so much on yeah they do that, but now it's gonna they also gonna have the ability to say, hey, you know what, if you get $500 whatever a month or $1,000 a month, you know, maybe if you don't spend it in that month, we're gonna start charging you reverse interest on it, we're gonna take it away. You know, like, these negative interest rates are possible. People they're gonna be able to start charging us for the money that they're giving us in weird ways, right? So I don't know. I mean, that's going to be one thing too. So
well, they already did that with that pandemic money. Unemployment is taxed, right? Taxed.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing that. So
somebody,
and that's just all that is more control. Like,
somebody will figure out a way if that's really the case.
But you know, the way it was explained to me, the reason they tax our unemployment is so the states are still able to recoup what they would get from our paycheck anyway.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because the states are still sucking off of the federal's tit always. And because states have budgets, you know, that's what we dealt with. Like, for instance, you know, my personal experience in the restaurant, like, state, that's county. County has a budget. They don't care. Yeah, they don't get it. They're a landlord just like anybody else. They're really, at the end of the day, you know, we may look at them as government, but they're not business registered with the Fed, you know.
Yeah. Everybody,
it all
business.
Trickles back up to federal money. Yes,
because at the end of the day, it's a financial, like, amazing financial math institution, made
where everybody's and balance sheets feeds off of the next.
That's right, and somebody, some genius, has created it over time and tweaked it, and you know, made it work for them. And so, yes, now it's very much that where it's. It's just a big business, you know. It's like the populace that is this, the taxpayer, they're the money, they're the income, they're the income stream, and politicians pander to them to try to get more money, you know, and for their bullshit and what they do with it. And sometimes we all see that money go to weird fucking places we don't get, but at the end of the day, it's just a big business, and that money's gonna get spent in that budget. Fans. You know,
I'm with you. I feel like it's a big business, but I also sometimes feel like it's bigger than just a big business. I feel like it's just one big giant soul-sucking machine.
Tell me more.
So the reason why DeFi and decentralization in general is so hot is because people are seeing real censorship in the modern age. That we're seeing Twitter telling people chill. We're seeing Instagram telling people, you sure you want to share that? We're seeing,
you know, that Facebook telling AI, people think this. Google,
yeah,
think
exactly.
That.
Now,
now YouTube, whatever the intentions are, people being deplatformed.
Whatever the intentions are, whether noble or nefarious, the fact is that, you know, they are policing speech, right?
Real shit.
And they decide, like, when a YouTube channel should be shut down, right? They can, TikTok can decide, you know what, we no longer like crypto-related channels promoting cryptocurrency, and they shut that down. Yep, but then all of a sudden they come out with an announcement that they have a brand new big partnership with Audius, right? Which is decentralized music streaming. So again, it's kind of like enormous gap in the market
for like
unless it's something we like, you know. Yeah. And that's why things like you know, there's Theta TV, which is decentralized video streaming, so that you can put up your video and then you can't have your channel taken away like YouTube can do to you. You know, like you make your program, you upload it, and who can take it down? No one can take it down.
No, I mean, I guess it's
decentralized.
It is decentralized. Unless it's copyrighted, right?
And then it'll get burned.
If there is a copyright issue, there is a process, right? There is a process.
The courts reign supreme in that if you have a copyright for something.
But it becomes really difficult. Once something's on a blockchain, it becomes difficult to just wipe that out. But
there's been a few things that have already come down. That whole Pepe thing, which I think is so stupid, by the way.
Depending on how decentralized it really is, because like,
right,
I'm learning
otherwise
right now
they could
that
burn
there's a
it.
Lot of, yeah, there's a lot of things that are being called decentralized, but and there's also levels of decentralization, right? So like, right. You know, if Serge, you and I have everything between our two servers, then hey, it's decentralized, right?
Totally.
You know what I mean? But at the end of the day,
right? A lot of so-called DeFi is actually CeFi.
Yeah. Yes, and there's definitely a lot of like,
or people, you know, think
unclear scenarios,
or people think because there's a blockchain that the company is in, you know, is a decentralized project, but it doesn't mean that at all, right? Because when, you know, when you're buying like a coin and your transaction's on the blockchain, right? It's not like you're buying a stock. You're buying a coin that's either like that either has utility or it's holding value or it's for transactions, or it's not necessarily any kind of ownership in the company itself, right? Yes. It's just for
some of these coins,
one of those purposes. Although some of them do have like, you can vote, like you get partial governance when you buy the tokens.
It's no different.
So in that sense, the model for the whole business becomes more of a decentralized project.
But there's a finite amount of things, right? Most things.
Play.
There's a finite amount. Coin.
Not always.
Yeah.
No, some things have an unlimited amount, like Dogecoin. It's unlimited, but it's a real blockchain.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely real because people spend money on it, so it's got value. That's that. You know, there's no two ways about what's valuable is when people put money down on it. That's what's valuable. It's like simple.
But how did we get on that tangent? Oh, right. How decentralized is something really?
Right.
But I think one of the central tenets of the crypto sphere in general is like, you know, power to the many, right? Although, oddly enough, it's such a small percentage of the population that is in that world. You know, like to be in the top 1% of Bitcoin holders, they say you need to have about 0.253 Bitcoin. 0.2 to be in the top 1% of Bitcoin holders.
Okay.
Now, of course, you know, there's entities or people that have like over $1 billion worth of Bitcoin, right? Whereas right now, 0.253 is probably like whatever, 30 grand. Right? Something like that. I mean, you know, half of Bitcoin right now is about 25, 26, so whatever, 0.25.
Where do they get that? The top 1%?
I mean, 0.25 is even less. Yeah. Wait,
what you're saying, I'm doing half math. To that statistic here.
He's got to show the math, or he's got to break the math down.
Say
it's because the price is always changing.
1% of, I know, but even at this point, when was this? I mean,
no, if it's at about 50K and 0.25 is a quarter.
Are we talking about 1% of the total 50 population? Is like
$12,000 of no, 0.253 of a Bitcoin.
Okay, is what?
Of actual okay. Bitcoin.
So
no, that percent. So you're of saying 1% of people to be in the that
top 1% of.
Of holders,
Bitcoin holders.
Got it. Because a bunch of people threw $100 in.
Yep.
Right. So but this is how much you have if you
bunch of people. But how many people threw $1,000 in? How many people have $5,000 in? How many people? Have...
Here's the graph.
So, understood. Yeah.
Understood.
So you 0.253 Bitcoin. That number stuck in my head, you know. I was like,
early adopters
to be in the top 1%. Interesting.
See, this is what I'm saying. Like, the future is different.
I've lost holes of Bitcoin. It's crazy.
Like, you guys are such early adopters on something that, like, if played right, is the future curve.
The estimates actually have grown. They originally thought that there was like maybe like 2 million Bitcoin lost over the years, people losing private keys or throwing out a computer, whatever. Cold storage getting lost or damaged.
I just realized I think I lost some Tron too.
I don't hear people talk highly of Tron very often.
It was doing all right. I mean, over
I gotta
the years,
say, it could, like, TRX. But
it's you know why it's not really a U.S. coin. It's an Asian coin. It's a big Asian coin.
Mm. So top 1% of Bitcoin holders. Top 1%. I also heard today, fun fact, that Cuba was thinking about getting into the Bitcoin legal tender.
Gangsters.
And
I mean, who's that? The
government of Cuba. The
government? Wow.
Just like El Salvador. That goes in effect like in the next... When is it? Like next week or something? Or in the next 2 weeks becomes their legal tender in El Salvador.
We're going to starve our people and then give them the ability to buy Bitcoin when it's fucking super high. That's real good.
And
then when everything crashes, just be like, hey, wasn't us.
Wait, Bitcoin. Is it super high right now?
It was the Bitcoin.
He's talking
about it's Bitcoin? Super high to an early adopter or to someone that jumped in at the right time.
I think it's kind of high right now. I think it's all lining up, and the people that I pay attention to and follow, and in most technical analysis, people will tell you it could still hit 250,000 this cycle.
It happens fast. That shit moves fast.
A lot of things are going to happen in the next 4 months, guys. I think. And you heard it here. My this timing is you've heard this it. Year.
Well, this guy's surge still called September 6th.
Your time. What'd you say?
My timing is closer to the end of the year. I think so
what do you call
your timing as in your exit strategy?
Yeah. I'm kind of paying attention to a 4-year market cycle. Been in it that long.
So yeah. Basically, I mean,
can we just say that we're not
common knowledge that there is a 4-year cycle with Bitcoin, and that's why there's a 4-year cycle with crypto in general. But there is also a lot of talk about how much more money is invested this time around and how many more big banks, investment companies, venture capitalists, billionaires are using it as a store of value. And if they're buying it and holding it, it's not going to crash.
No, I think it's still cyclical, just like stock markets. Everybody and all those people own stocks. They're in the stock market. That shit still goes up and down. I mean, people have gold commodities. These markets still fluctuate. They're on cycles. Maybe they're not on 4-year cycles. Maybe they're on different year cycles because they're a little bit more matured.
But
maybe
Bitcoin's they don't have as much volatility. 4-year cycles because it goes through the halving. And that doesn't happen with stocks.
It happens with cycles. Happen with stocks.
But they don't have gold. A halving event. It's not like all of a sudden you have twice as many stocks, right?
No, but they still have cycles. I mean, these people that are applying technical analysis to cryptocurrencies didn't just start figuring out these rules with crypto. Right. They've been applying these formulas to all sorts of markets.
Stock to flow and
stocks, RSI,
flow charts.
You know, they follow Fibonacci levels, Ikimoto clouds and all sorts of different resistance levels, and they do the math, and they don't let the news or the fundamental whatever's happening here or there in the courts really change their mind on shit. They just pay attention to math, which at the end of the day is human emotion. So I don't know. I'm not saying I put all my eggs in their basket, but I mean, you know, you got to look at certain shit and decide what to believe, you know, hype or something that makes a little bit more fundamental sense.
You guys should all rewind into that because that was our whole math right there. Kurt just gave the answer. He's Neo right now, and everybody should just rewind that like right now.
Kurt wants you to take profits.
He's coming.
Well, you know what? Look, heard if you're many up, times. If you are up, I don't want people to just think they're just going to ride this shit to the sunset and
resistance
become a billionaire
training
by next year. I mean, be smart. Like if you start seeing, I'm not, look, I, you know, a lot of people say they call it the blow off top.
Mm-hmm.
It may come. It came in 17 and I watched it. I was like, oh shit. Whoa, here we go. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't do nothing. And I still didn't do nothing. And December came along and January was here. And all of a sudden I didn't do nothing. And I was right back down lower than where I was, you know, and I had to just hang tight and ride it out the last 3 years.
But every new low is a higher low, and every new high is a higher high.
There is. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's true. But we're still so early in this cycle that we're not going to just not have these blow off tops.
But it's
not,
also.
But there's all hype. This market is filled with hype, which means you have crazy hype. People jump in and the shit flies. And then you have a way overvalued asset. And then it starts to fall back. And people, you know, and that's it. I mean, and look, a lot of people will talk about this major cycle with Bitcoin and they'll say that. I mean, this one kid just mentioned something today that I was really impressed with. He was studying the charts and timed out that, like, when they first started allowing Bitcoin futures and shorting on the markets, it that was the beginning of the bear market in 17, 18. Right? In 17, 18 is when they started
Maybe because people had more incentive to manipulate the market.
Not just people, major institutions
got in
on this. They shorted the market for a year, brought everything back down, and then started trickling their way back in. And they're going to ride this up to the top, and they're going to need us and our hype to get in, just like we were, or some of us in 2017 when we were watching things double and triple, and we were like, we got to get in on this ride.
They play like a hedge fund.
Get on the ride, and boom, 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 and that drives the price up.
Like a hedge fund.
And that's why they're announcing it now, that these major institutions are buying money. They're not buying now. They bought.
Right, they've been buying.
They just want you to think.
They're only telling you now so that you go buy.
They're buying a lot more.
Yeah.
And you know it's more because you can look up the transactions for a lot of these. A lot of people are able to figure out, you know, whose wallet is whose. All those transactions are public. You know?
Yeah.
And it turns out you saw those quarter earnings that Coinbase released, whatever it was a few weeks back. That was bananas. They made, what was it like, $1.3 billion or something in the quarter, and their operating costs were $80 million.
But if you look at it, there's like, I know you said something about their stock really went up. I looked.
No, their stock's sucking.
It's not doing that great, but no, I'm okay with it. You know why? Because it came in super high. I remember came in
super high. I pushed the button as quick as humanly possible. I was like, oh, come on. When's it going live? When's it going live? Try to catch it right away. It's going to pump. Try to catch it right away.
No, that wasn't going to happen.
But then as it came down, had to average in and was able to bring, you know, the price a lot lower.
Yeah, I got some at like 220. But
at this point, it's just the waiting game.
Yeah, no.
230.
If you're buying 230, 240.
Its lowest was 215.
I remember it dropped down. Jesus. I bought it so low. I waited for it to come back down. I didn't get an IPO. I saw that I was trying to get it before it IPO'd, which, I mean,
it was supposed to come out at like 250, and it ended up coming out at like 350. Went up into the 400s like immediately.
Yeah, but I did the same thing, and I made the same mistake with Facebook back in 14 or whatever that was. I bought it right when it IPO'd at, I don't know what it was. It was like 40-something bucks. And I was like, all right. And then it dropped to like $20-something dollars. And I was,
But where is it now?
I don't know. I sold it when it was like damn near 800 or 500. I don't know what it was at. 600-something up there. It was way up there. I don't know. Maybe I'm bugging. Maybe I'm confusing that with the Apple stock. What is it? I did it right with Facebook.
It's $372.
Yeah, it never went that high. That was Apple, probably. I don't know, but it was probably in the 200s or something. I made good money. I just had to wait and ride it out. You know, I didn't. But I literally, with it, like 2 days after I bought it, it dropped in half in its value. And that's what happens with a lot of people with crypto, too, because they're buying in when they hear about this stuff. And it doesn't necessarily matter where the market is at that point. You want to get in on it. And then all of a sudden, 3 days later, you got half of your money and you're frightened. You know, you don't understand it enough.
Well, that's why you're supposed to invest in stuff that you at least understand enough to know if you think it's a good, like, business. You know what I mean?
Anything, if you think don't invest it's
something that has a purpose that people are going to use. Not something that's just like, oh, that sounds cool. Like, do you think it's going to be adopted?
Yeah, real life utility.
So that's why Audius is a win. That's why something like I think Theta would be a win. There's a lot of thing. That's why Ethereum's a win because people are actually using it for all kinds of shit. The
biggest one.
What, Bitcoin?
No. Which organization is the biggest, most infiltrated with all of the major world institutions, already has the biggest platform and understanding?
What, the dollar?
Not even. they have the biggest use case scenario laid out that any other cryptocurrency has ever described or put forth. To be utilized on a global scale to solve a very real problem, and that is global payments. And that's XRP.
This guy, I knew he was going there. Ripple. This guy is XRP all the way. I
don't understand why people don't know that. I mean, the news XRP is clear.
ATW.
Yeah, we should let Kurt have the last 9 minutes to go into the crazy talk he wanted to have.
Nah, I'll say that for another time. I'll wait for other people to come on.
So it seems... Okay, so I remember when... when the lawsuit started against XRP and the two CEOs or two co-founders,
Brad Garlinghouse and I forget the other guy's name off the top of my head. I should know it. Chris Larson.
There you go.
Thank you. That's what I needed.
They immediately were saying they didn't want to settle.
And they shouldn't.
They were saying it all the time.
We all need clarity.
When the lawsuit was it was pretty much like, hey, settle for you doing wrong, or we're going to have to take you to court. And they're like, nah.
So yeah,
the thing started, and all along people were like, well, I think it's going to be settled quickly. and it just keeps dragging on and on. And one has some good news, and then the other kind of has some good news. And the other has, but it's also like a lot of real shady shit where they're like, "Well, explain to us how this is wrong," and they're like, "No," and they're like, "But you said these guys, remember?" They were saying,
yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but what it's revealing is that the shadiest characters in the whole scenario is the SEC themselves.
Yeah, they didn't want to give up the definition of of what it was, of a security, basically, right? They didn't want to give up the definition of how they personally view a security. It's all right, because we're not going to go into it all in the next 10 minutes. All right.
No. Well, why not? Because there's nothing else but, talking about,
but they didn't want to do it, but then the court forced them to do it, and then they're like, well you know, now
yes, I mean, because here's the deal: we've had an SEC chair or representatives of the SEC for the, through the last administration that has opted to not draft and create laws and guidelines and set out a nice clear pathway and see, you know, if you're the coach of the game, what do? You state the rules first. You don't go around picking out people in the game and deciding if they broke a rule when they don't know if they broke the rules because you didn't say what the rules were.
Yeah. It's like throwing a flag in football. Yeah. And you're like, what happened? They're like 10 yards.
And this is what's going on. Right. It's the mindfuckery of what's there. I mean, it's commonplace in everything that's happening right now. That's why everybody's scrambled and the world's upside down. But aside from that, more importantly on this specific topic, that's what the SEC has done. They've been able to, what is everybody saying? Pick winners and losers, because, you know, everything that they're saying XRP is guilty of and what makes XRP a security also applies to Ethereum. Yet they openly have given Ethereum the pass. And they've recorded these chairmen and these representatives of the SEC openly saying these things with their own words in lectures and in interviews throughout the years that they've captured and utilized their own words, stating and then saying openly that they feel like that's the other big thing. The last SEC chair has, I forget his name, but like Gensler, the one before him, was like recorded saying in open discussions that he thought Ethereum wasn't a security, but earlier in the speech, he goes on to say that, you know, his words are his own words, but they're not representative of the organization and the SEC itself. And, you know, he separates himself from that. And then you
right, they're saying there's a precedent, and they're like, no, you can't use that precedent, basically.
Well, he's saying he didn't think it was, and he doesn't clarify. But then he goes on to say that he didn't think it was. And then he said that it was his personal opinion, not the opinion or the ruling or the stance of the SEC itself, right? It's like, you know, giving the disclaimer. But he says this in his speech. And then all of a sudden you hear all of his other subordinates, you know, his other chairs underneath him sharing the same sentiment as if it's their policy. And they're picking and choosing when they want to support and go after people. And that's a very dangerous world. You can't live like that. Like, businesses can't thrive in that environment. People can't. That's not a clear marketplace. It's not a clear environment to work and live in. People can't live like that. I don't know, in my opinion. And that's what they're trying to do. So that's my two cents on it. I won't go on my rant.
It was definitely not nice.
I like the rant.
Yeah. So in my opinion, the SEC are the bad guys.
I feel like with their whole approach, their approach is to win. It's not to like figure this out and like pave the road going forward.
Court case will do that. It seems like
they want to sort of take control of the space. Whereas at the beginning of the trial, even they were looking for, I think, more leadership from Congress. And Congress was pretty much like, you know, do what you got to do.
Yeah, and the language of this infrastructure bill, when the ball got smacked to their side of the court, they dropped it.
And it's unclear, really, even who has authority over what? Because they're like different government agencies saying like, well, they can't even sell them that.
The FinCEN and the FinCEN is also a financial agency within the United States, and there's documents.
They solve like financial crimes, basically, right?
It's a different. Here, you can do your research.
Yeah, let's see. Let's bring something up right here. FinCEN.
It's a financial. Yeah, I don't know if it's that's how it's spelled. FinCEN. Yeah.
Yeah, money laundering, counterterrorism. What the fuck I'm talking about, son?
All right, so there you go. There's documents saying, like, you know, like they're cleared. XRP has been cleared and worked with
Financial FinCEN. Crimes Enforcement Network. Represent. Anyway. Look at these guys. Look at this eagle.
But my point is, I don't know. If it comes back to which crypto is showing that it's going to have the most utility in a real life application on a global level, then I think XRP is going to be it. It's the chosen one.
Look at the binary code in here.
Yep.
The binary code. And then they got like, I guess this probably represents like the law house or whatever. Yep. The court.
Treasury. That's the treasury.
Yeah, that's the treasury.
Says right though.
So yeah, it's part of the U.S. Treasury. So if the U.S. Treasury is outright, there's documents from the U.S. Treasury saying that XRP is not a security, that it's a currency, then you have this other thing going on. You have an opposing view of two different government agencies. It sounds to me like they should be going to court with each other, not with XRP.
And they will. Sure.
Yeah, big shout out to DJ No Request. All right. Haven't seen No Request for a minute. You got us for 5 more minutes, bro. We're dropping the knowledge. Oh, God. And for real, we got 5 minutes left. So
what do you want to talk about?
Where are we taking this for the last 5?
Off a cliff.
What else? Oh, are we going to take it back to? Well, first of all, let me give a shout out to our unofficial official sponsor, Fat Whiskey. And
delicious.
Disclaimer, I'm only calling them a sponsor because he gave me the bottle when I saw him.
That's real.
So big shout out to Cliff. Thank you booth. For the Fat Whiskey, baby.
I love that nice. Booze love.
Available from the guys at Fat
Happy
Buddha.
Friday.
Did you go to any of his parties at Roberta's? Were they good?
No, they look good, and I know you love Roberta's.
Man. And I mean, I love some Pharaoh too. I wanted to go hear him.
It's been so long, actually, since I've even been there. They sell Roberta's like in the frozen section at my supermarket.
They've done it.
I name a cat Pharaoh.
Hilarious. Spelled that way. Spelled Baramondra.
I haven't spelled it yet. Yeah. Maybe not. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe we'll never spell it, except maybe, for when
not after him, but more just after.
Conceptual. I really haven't been to any.
He just looks so, you know.
Farrowy.
To any jams? Yes. Yeah, I don't think. I'm trying to think. Oh, there's a good one tomorrow in Coney Island at the Coney Island Amphitheater, right? Smith and Wesson and Master Ace and MOP and. Who else? There's some other, a couple other good names. Looks good, y'all. Saturday, NYC Coney Island. Be there. I won't.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to that, but it's going to be a fun jam.
It'll
be raining tomorrow.
I hope it doesn't rain. Or I hope if it rains, it's one of those like makes it even better show. Yeah.
That happens. It does.
Yeah, I didn't go to any of Chris's parties on the boat. I heard it rained the other day. I mean, I talked to you about that, Serge, but you didn't want to go. It was raining.
Yeah.
That was the tropical storm coming our way. Or was it a hurricane?
Nothing like a tropical storm on a boat party.
Yeah, you're like, yo, I'm going to the boat. I'm like,
try to go to a boat party in a tropical
storm. Isn't it
going to
like fly away or something? Like,
I didn't end up
like somebody's losing a purse.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Doors.
The toilet was like bubbling like crazy.
Oh yeah, sure.
Like, oh shit.
Sure, right,
I put the plunger in, I put the masking tape over it on both ends.
Stay down, baby. Stay down.
You're probably the lowest drain level.
Yes, you are. Line.
Anyway.
The toilet is like, hey, how you doing?
Yep.
Friday night compost. Only paper. Cause at the end of the day, that's what it came down to, right? The credit cards, they were forcing some kind of like higher moral ground onto OnlyFans, and OnlyFans was buckling because they wanted to be able to process their payments, and basically the fans stood up and said, you're not going to have anything to process. And
they reneged.
Activism actually brought about some change, and that change is that nothing's changed. Hey, so yeah. Congratulations.
Funny how that
I don't know but, if I would consider that a win.
But. Well, I'm gonna say congratulations, and maybe you might want to start peeking around. And you know, it's like your chance to get everything off the old computer, like nice and neat before it goes down. You know, like okay, let's make this move,
unload it all.
You know, like just in case this goes down, I don't really have anything important on it. You know, I'm good. I'm ready to go somewhere else. So well,
that's my man Evan is my girl. He's the alternative. There at least is. That's what he's saying he's going to be.
Well, he's get my after girl. It.
That's it. That's all. Only paper, more garbage podcast. We'll see you Sunday. I don't know what time because I have a schedule conflict, but we'll talk about that. Hey!
Peace.
Flubzilla, Kurt Bugs, good looking. And I'll see you guys later.
Thanks, guys.
It's a podcast.